Ryan was in a frontier pest hole, standing in the scorching heat of the noon sun. It took only a moment for him to be aware that the scent of fresh-cut lumber that flooded his nostrils came from the wooden frame that surrounded him, a frame that was clearly a gallows. Ryan's hands were tied tightly behind him with rawhide. The knots pulled so hard that he could feel blood dripping from purpled nails. He wore his usual clothes, except for the long coat and the white silk scarf with the silver dollars sewn into each end. The holster on his right hip was empty of the Sig Sauer, and the sheath on his left hip lacked the weight and balance of his 18-inch panga. There was a crowd building around him. He glanced to his right. A stubby white man and a tall, elegant black man leaned against the sidewall of the Golden Eagle Saloon, each with long-necked banjos in their hands. The balcony of the Two-Up Gaudy was already lined with whores, dressed only in cotton drawers and chemises, with high-buttoned boots. They all held parasols to shield them from the ferocity of the sun. One of them, a skinny blonde with sleepy eyes, saw Ryan looking in their direction. She touched herself between her thighs, sucked her finger, and blew him a kiss. Ryan looked away. There were three men on the gallows with him. One was a stout sheriff with a polished badge. He seemed to have eaten beans for his breakfast. Next to him stood a priest, sweating heavily in a black suit of good broadcloth. He looked to be in his mid-20s, with a pale face and spectacles with gold rims that kept slipping down his beaky nose. He was holding a prayer book in both hands. The third figure was, Ryan guessed, the hangman. He was immensely tall and skeletally thin, dressed from head to toe in black. On the index finger of his right hand, the man wore a silver ring, shaped like a death's head, with a fire opal set in its brow. The man wore a hood that covered his head, with slits for the eyes. Ryan glanced twice at the bizarre figure, blinking as he seemed to glimpse the red glow of fiery embers behind the eye slits. The rough hemp noose, tight around Ryan's throat, was prickling at his skin. He turned his head to one side in an attempt to try and shift the discomfort of the large knot that the hangman had adjusted just below his left ear. An urchin in the front of the swelling crowd stopped and picked up a rough pebble, then hurled it towards Ryan. The child's mother, a rosy-cheeked matron in a gingham dress and poke bonnet, slapped at the boy and shrugged apologetically at Ryan.
How long, Sheriff Nolan?
The fat lawman reached into his vest pocket and plucked out a silver pocket watch.
Be noon in about 5 minutes, Reverend.
The hooded hangman smiled.
Time passes so slowly when one is being amused.
That is true, sir.
Anything you want to say, Cawdor? You got a couple of minutes.
I don't know why I'm here.
How's that, son?
I know it sounds stupid, but I'd be grateful if you could tell me why you're planning on hanging me.
Well, now, that's a good one, ain't it, Reverend?
Indeed it is, Sheriff. Indeed it is.
The noose seemed to be getting tighter around Ryan's throat.
You're here, Cawdor, to pay the blood price for the crime you committed.
What crime?
As if you didn't know.
I don't know. Fireblast, Sheriff. Stop this bastard game playing.
Now, son, you know very well that you must have committed a crime. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here to give you a neck stretching party.
To teach you to tango on air.
To show the good folks of the town how we settle the hash of bloody bastards like you.
But why?
The rope was pinching harder. The hooded hangman moved forward a couple of steps to stand close to Ryan. He emitted the odor of fresh-turned earth in an ancient grave.
This gallows has especially been built for you, Ryan. Once you've hung a few hours, we can take it down forever.
What about my body?
Cut down, dragged around town behind the Lady Mayor's stallion, then stripped naked and slung on the manure pile behind the clan livery stables so folks can see you're truly dead and gone.
And then we can all sleep easy.
Noon. Best to get it over.
The sheriff walked to the front of the platform.
You all know why we're here, so now we'll do it.
The priest stood at Ryan's side, resting one moist hand on Ryan's shoulder. The other held a small black prayer book. A breeze fluttered the pages.
insomuch as it has blessed Almighty God to take this wretch into his keeping. We are gathered here today in his sight and in the face of this congregation to witness the prescribed ending for this evildoer.
But what have I done?
Tell us how blessed are the cheesemakers!
The sentence of the court was that Ryan Cawdor should be brought to this place of lawful execution and here hung by the neck until he was dead. His body finally to be buried in an unmarked grave in the grounds of the prison where he was last confined. And may God have mercy on his soul.
No chance of that. Not after slaying my brothers and my sister.
Just do your duty, hangman.
But you haven't told me my crime!
Life is easy, but waiting is hard.
The hangman reached up to adjust the knot. For a moment, Ryan had an odd vision. He knelt naked in a shell hole between two masked men who passed a slim-bladed flensing knife back and forth in front of him, as though they waited for him to seize the bone handle and thrust it deep into his own chest.
No! I won't do it.
Correct. I will.
I want to live!
Reaching to one side, the hooded man pulled a long wooden lever. There was a dreadful jarring sensation, as if his spinal cord had snapped in two. But he knew that he still lived. The gallows drop hadn't been long enough to break his neck and give him a relatively merciful passing. Instead, Ryan dangled from the hemp noose, one boot toe barely touching the ground. He opened his eye. Sheriff Nolan, the priest, and the hooded executioner had all gone. The town, the saloon, the gaudy sluts, and the watching throng, all gone. The gallows had become transmogrified into a crooked hanging tree, a lightning-blasted sycamore with a jagged branch sticking out, almost at a right angle. Ryan glanced down, seeing that the toes of his dusty combat boots were now a couple of inches from the stunted grass. It might as well have been a couple of miles. He was dying, but slowly. He could smell juniper and sagebrush and the scent of an opened grave. The tall, black-clad figure of the hangman stood just in front of him, his hands clasped together, head to one side, as he considered Ryan's slow passing.
Help. Did you ask for help, Ryan?
Please!
It pleases me not to please you, but to please myself and the memories of my family.
Either the sun was setting, or death was closing down all of the lines. Darkness was spreading across the high plains, and shadows were lengthening across the sun-baked turf. Ryan could see his own elongated shape, still slowly twisting.
I'll show you mercy. I'll speed your passing. Feel life flee your corpse. I'll hang on to you, Ryan. My arms around your neck in a lover's embrace.
The executioner did as he said he would. It was as if a steel hand of fire was reaching up the inside of Ryan's spine and into his brain, squeezing out his immortal soul. As the executioner held his arm around Ryan, he discarded his hood. A mane of snowy hair tumbled over the hangman's face, writhing against his skin like coffin worms. Mad ruby eyes glared at him. Ryan now was on his back, on the floor of a gateway chamber, as the armorglass walls changed from dark brown to the lightest and palest of pinks. But Ryan could hardly see any of that, nor could he see any of his companions. His range of vision was blocked by a leering skull scant inches from his own. The face was long and angular, the sharp cheekbones honed like an Egyptian mummy's, the skin dried and leathery. A mane of snowy hair tumbled across the high forehead, brushing against Ryan's cheeks, feeling like the caress of 100 tiny desiccated worms. And the eyes, wide and blankly staring,
brimmed with fresh crimson blood that leaked from the tear ducts and spilled down onto Ryan's face. The creature gripped him by the throat, iron fingers crushing Ryan's neck. Ryan knew who it was. Melmoth Cornelius, last survivor of the depraved family of genetically created vampires, the lingering spawn of the Genesis Project.
Melmoth!
The creature didn't move, his face pressed into Ryan's neck as though he were nuzzling at the artery below the ear. Ryan's face was livid, swollen, his mouth open. His hands lay limp at his side.
Pull him off!
Christy, fighting nausea, crawled over on hands and knees and placed her hands on the shoulders of the tall vampire. She saw another person move in the chamber.
Christy?
Mildred Winonia Wyeth was an African-American doctor from the pre-dark past. She had been born in December of 1964 and had become one of the United States' leading cryonic scientists, specializing in the medical applications of freezing. Ironically, Mildred had been frozen in December of the year 2000, when minor abdominal surgery went awry. Days later, the world went nuke mad, and only one person in every 10,000 survived. Europe, Russia, and the Americas were totally devastated by the brief war that ended all wars. Then came the long winters, when the planet was pushed back to an almost medieval state, and all science and industry vanished forever. And the death count ran higher. During the next 90 years or so, Mildred had slept dreamlessly on, sealed in her capsule, maintained in a buried medical fortress by computer-controlled machinery powered by tireless nuke generators. Then Ryan and the others had come by, like princes in a fairy tale, and awakened her from her frozen sleep.
Christy, what's wrong?
Mildred shook her head to try to clear out the cobwebs from the jump. She noticed the walls had changed color to a delicate shell pink, which meant that the jump had worked, and they were elsewhere.
Get off of him!
Mildred looked around, her attention caught by Ryan, who was lying on the floor with someone trying to strangle him.
Melmoth?
Mildred lunged across to try to help Christy, who was fighting to drag the vampire away from his victim. The commotion woke Dean Carter, Ryan's 11-year-old son. The boy felt as if a mule had been dancing a slow shuffle inside his brain. Across the chamber, Dean saw that Doc Tanner had suffered a nosebleed, as the old man often did during a jump. But the boy's dark eyes were caught by the strange tableau at the center of the gateway. His father lay unconscious, his face swollen and engorged with blood, while one of the vampires was trying to throttle him. Christy and Mildred were both wrestling with Melmoth to try to drag him off Ryan.
No!
The boy scrambled on hands and knees to try to help. He crawled across the legs of John Barrymore Dix, the armorer of the group, one of the greatest experts on weaponry in the whole of Deathlands. He and Ryan had been friends for close to 20 years, both of them having ridden the powerful war wags with the legendary traitor.
Wake up, JB! Help get him off!
Dean's jostling brought JB slowly out of the sleeping blackness, and he fumbled immediately for his spectacles, putting them on the bridge of his narrow nose. His right hand felt for his weapons, the 9mm Uzi and the unusual Smith & Wesson M4000 scattergun. There was a fight going on in the chamber, with Christy, Mildred, and Dean battling to drag Melmoth off Ryan. Doc slept on, undisturbed by the clumsy, ugly brawl that was taking place only a yard away from him. Theophilus Algernon Tanner had been born in a small village in Vermont on a bitterly cold February day in 1868. In November of 1896, while a happily married man with two little children, he was a hapless victim of Operation Kronos, the time-trawling wing of the totality concept. A highly secret section of government, Kronos had been trying to grab people from the past and bring them forward in time. There had been many hideously disgusting failures, and only one success, Doc Tanner, who proved to be such a difficult specimen that the White Coats eventually pushed him nearly 100 years into the future, into the heart of Deathlands. The double experience of time travel had tipped Doc's mind a little off its gyro centers, and he sometimes functioned as if he were missing a few cards from a full deck.
Now he lay there, still tipped into darkness by the swirling horrors of jumping from place to place, where your molecules, atoms, and neurons were scattered through the ether and reassembled someplace else. At his side, the albino teenager Jack Lauren also lay unconscious. Mattran's jumps affected different people in different ways, and Jack lay deathly still, hands folded across his chest, a smudge of blood trickling from his left ear. The young man and the old-timer, side by side, were oblivious to the fight that had suddenly developed. Christy grabbed one of Melmoth's slender wrists, trying to break the death grip that the vampire had on Ryan's throat. But it was as hard and cold as marble, and didn't give a fraction of an inch. In desperation, she slid her hands down to Melmoth's fingers with their curved, horn nails. She levered her hand onto the little finger of his left hand and jerked the finger back with all her might. Melmoth's broken finger dangled back and loose, but he showed no reaction. Christy grabbed two more fingers. There was still no reaction. Mildred locked her arms around Melmoth's white neck, trying to force him away from Ryan. Her fingers clutched at the side of the vampire's throat, probing for the carotid artery, intending to try to cut off the blood flow to the brain and render the white-haired butcher unconscious.
Oh my God! He's dead!
No, he's unconscious, but he's still breathing.
Not Ryan, Melma!
What?
Dead! He just died.
Shit, you're right. He's already getting cold.
Get him away from Ryan!
Half-standing, Christy pulled at the vampire and successfully dragged the corpse across the room. Even with the stiffening corpse on the other side of the chamber, Ryan still didn't move. The skin of his throat was marred by the bruises from Melmoth's iron fingers. Mildred knelt by him, putting her head on his chest and her hand on his wrist.
Slow but steady. I think you'll be okay.
Jack came around at that moment. And the first thing he saw was the distorted face of Melmoth Cornelius inches from his own face, the bloodied eyes staring into his.
Shit! Melmoth, he's what? Is he dead?
Yeah, and he was trying to take Dad with him.
Dad dead. Not dead dead? Who did Dad dead? Who dead up there?
Doc opened a pale, rheumy eye.
By the three Kennedys, it's Wandering Melmoth, looking as though he sits now in the Black Ferry across the Styx.
The bastard's chilled, if that's what you mean, Doc. And Ryan here came close to joining him on the last train west. But he'll make it.
Doc touched a gnarled finger to his nose, bringing it away streaked with blood. He wiped it with the sleeve of his antique frock coat. Between them, Christy and JB eased Ryan into a sitting position. Already his face was resuming a normal color, though the long scar that ran from the corner of his right eye down to his mouth still stood out brightly. Gradually, everyone in the chamber was making his or her own recovery from the rigors of the jump. Teen looked down at Melmoth's shriveled corpse.
How did he get in? When I went under, he wasn't in here with us. Did someone let him in?
No. Just as I slipped into the dark, I was sort of aware of someone trying to get in. He must have made it in the last second or so. If he'd tried to open the door when the jump was already going on, Gaia knows what might have happened.
Holy shit!
What is it, dear boy?
The vampire's sort of rotting, only speeded up.
Christy stayed at Ryan's side, but the others moved to join Dean.
Dark night. You're right, Dean. Look at that.
Alive, Melmoth and his brothers and sister had looked deathly pale and emaciated. Dead, he was shrinking away toward nothing. His ruby eyes had turned milky and were beginning to suppurate in their bony caverns. The skin across the honed cheekbones was so taut it was already splitting, opening up like tiny lips, showing the whiteness of bone beneath. The lips had peeled back from the slightly pointed teeth, cracking at the corners. The gums were receding, and several of the teeth were visibly loose in their sockets. The vampire's fingers were curling into claws, the strong nails tearing deep gashes in the skin of the palms that wept a colorless ichor.
Ugh, he stinks! Can't we get him out of here before he rots into a puddle of dirty water?
As soon as Ryan comes around, we can think about a move.
It's not that bad, Dean. Seems to be dissipating. In fact, the air seems fresh.
Yeah, not the usual stale stuff. Maybe a part of the redoubt's opened up.
Doc picked up his beloved ebony swordstick and gripped it by the silver lionset hilt.
I would most certainly appreciate the chance to breathe some cool and dry air. I think that we've had a little too much of the warm and damp recently.
I have this idea that people tend to relish what they knew while growing up. Like you had in New England. Same for me. I wish I could sample the kind of air we had when I was growing up in Harmonyville. Like honey.
Ryan lifted his right hand as though he were trying to knock away a persistent mosquito.
Boss man's coming around. Should be fine in a few minutes.
Ryan recovered quickly and immediately queried the companions about the situation.
You think the jump killed him, Mildred?
I do, Ryan. We know that all four of them were sickly. That's why they wanted the boy and all of us, to freshen up their genes and revive their blood.
And Melmoth got this far. Far enough to try and chill me. Then died.
Looks that way. If Christy hadn't come around when she did, he might have done it too.
Ryan looked down at the muty creature.
He's melting away like butter in a heat wave.
As they used to say up in the Yukon in the days of 49, we sell butter by the quart in summer and milk by the pound in winter.
I don't get it. What's a quart and what's a pound, Doc? I've never been good at all those measurements. Rona never got around to teaching me.
The mention of the boy's mother brought her image to Ryan's mind. Remembering Sharona, Ryan wasn't surprised that she never got around to teaching the boy much. But she taught him plenty about survival, and in Deathlands that was worth more than all the history, geography, math, and science put together. Even so, everyone had already agreed, including Dean, that it was long past time for the lad to get himself a proper education. After all, he was to be part of the future, and the future needed every chance it could get. It was just a question of finding the right place. Good schools weren't all that common in Deathlands. In fact, schools of any kind were few and far between.
Are you sure you feel all right, lover?
Ryan nodded. His legs felt like wet string, and his throat was still crushed and painful, but he figured that this was likely to be about as good as he'd feel for a while.
Yeah, sure. Time to move.
Everyone drew their weapons, lining up behind Ryan, trying to avoid the small heap of festering liquid corruption that had once been Melmoth Cornelius.
Triple red, people.